the station of the stars. RTI.
Welcome to Postcard from Pop Rap, boys and girls, your weekly sideways look at the news, terribly alternative, and again, slightly sad this week. I'm Eric Wiltshire at the base of the glorious Tatry Mountains here in the east of Slovakia in the small town of Poprad, more like a village. It's been snowing. I'm dreaming of a white February, and it's beautiful and fresh, and it's a little bit cold, but we don't care because it's not a wet cold like it is over on the zit of the nose of Europe. In the hands of Lee Banks.
It's actually absolutely glorious. It's like a summer's day here.
Stop it. Cannot be positive at the beginning of a show.
I hate it.
It's not allowed. Horrible. You're off format. I'm going to strop.
Oh, all right then. Well, I'm going to have a strop as well. Mark, you take over.
Right. Well, thank you. And this is Mark Gander from Paris. And it's really not a bad day here, although the past few days it has been very cold.
I've got an intro for you
wet,
today.
Very raining.
I've got a flipping intro for you today.
Sorry?
I've got a well worked out intro for you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I've jumped the gun. Should we begin again?
Yes.
Come on, then.
And in Paris, the new home of the Dog Hotel, where for €35 a day, you can have your pooch pampered. It can have a little bath. It can even choose the DVD it wants to watch on television. Only dogs allowed in there. It could only happen in Paris, where Mark Andrews.
I hope they find them some toilets to go to.
Doggy toilets.
They've got doggies.
The pavements around here.
They've got doggies.
What pavements are for? That's they've got doggy shoes.
They've got doggy toilets. Yes. So it's Paris. Should we get underway? Because we have got so much to do this week, boys and girls, haven't we?
We certainly have, and a lot of it is very annoying indeed.
Some of it is very, very annoying, that has to be said. In fact, I've got some
incredibly more... sorry about that.
Yeah, I've got some
what,
more...
What, for being annoying?
I'm just incredibly...
I'm not used to it now, Mark.
Anyway, we'll do some messages a bit later on. I've got to say hi to the guys in Talk Radio, X Replay Radio, on RTI, and of course on Audio Boot as well. Thank you for your company. Sad news to start off with. Diddle-a-dun, 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 do-do-do. The Brigadier, namely Nicholas Courtney, the actor's died at 81 years old. He was the Brigadier in Doctor Who, and he was in so many of the series. Got to a ripe old age of 81. He was the Brigadier with the moustache. He was the one...
I don't know who you're talking about.
You don't know who I'm talking about?
I have no idea. Doctor Who is rubbish.
Excuse me?
No.
Excuse me?
Wonderful.
Excuse me?
Doctor Who is as bad as Star Wars.
Is there a veterinary surgeon near you? Oi, is there a veterinary surgeon near you?
Why, does that Mark one need for his dog hotel?
No, you need one because it's time to put you down.
Why? Because I say Star Trek's rubbish and Doctor Who. Nobody even knows what he's called. Doctor Who? Yeah, it's just rubbish. It's badly constructed, badly acted, badly written, and all the sets fall down.
That just goes to prove my entire point.
And it's also in a telephone box size of the Buckingham Palace.
It's actually in a police box, which just goes to prove my entire point, Mark. What? Whenever a journalist reviews something, do the opposite. If they say it's rubbish, it's brilliant. If they say it's brilliant, it's rubbish. So
you
just
banned me from there for being positive. Now you're telling me off for being negative.
Have you ever seen a real police box?
Yes.
I've been held in them.
No, it didn't say police cell. It said police box. Yeah. Anyway.
It's sad when anybody dies.
It is rather.
Lethbridge Stewart.
Absolutely brilliant he was in that particular, several series. Tom Baker remembered him as a wonderful companion with a marvellous resonant voice. He did have one of those booming voices, which is absolutely fabulous. Boom.
Well, that's quite something coming from Tom Baker, isn't it? Because, I mean, he's got a pretty resonant voice. As well.
He has, actually, as it goes. Yeah. But if you ever see Brigadier Alistair Lethbridge Stewart, that was Nicholas Courtney, who was in Doctor Who, several, I think it was five series he was in, if my memory serves me right.
Recently or in the past? Well, it's obviously in the past now, couldn't be in the future, could it? But
no.
Was he one of the first Doctor Who?
No, he was in sort of the middle age of it, which is where Tom Baker was in.
He kept sort of popping up, really.
Yeah, he was. It's whenever they went back to sort of the quintessential English countryside type set that he would always be there.
Yes. But now, I'm incredibly sorry he's dead.
Yeah, me too.
I am as well.
Incredibly.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And I'm so sorry that his only claim to fame was to have appeared in something as rubbish as Doctor Who.
As I said before, he will go later in the programme, he will witter on about somebody that very few people know about. And if he's on the television, nobody would watch. But, when Doctor Who goes on, millions watch. Who's my
Hang
point?
On, we've got a breaking news story coming in from Yahoo.
Ha ha.
Well, seriously.
Go on.
Yes, go on.
Hang on, I'm just reading. Just wait, it's like ticker tape. It's going in front of my eyes.
Excuse me, this is not telex from years ago.
Well, it says, you saw what I did to my printer today.
I know, he jumped on it.
I jumped on my printer.
Jumped on your printer?
I jumped on my printer. It would take me an hour to print the scripts out for this, and I never got it printed out because it had only printed from the middle. So I put it on the floor, Andrea looked askance at me, and I jumped on it. All 17 stone of it came down. It shattered and flew across the room. There were shards of plastic and all sorts. And you know what she said to me? You know what she said? She said, you do realise that it's only 10 days since you've spent £60 on a new set of inkjets for it.
Was she right?
Yeah. I trashed it. I'm not doing this news thing anyway. All right, here it is.
Because the comedy's got out of it now, hasn't it?
Yeah, you just ruined it for me.
Hang on, how's it go? Tumbleweed rolls across the set in front of you. That was Lee Banks's joke.
It wasn't a joke, that was a true story. I sent you the picture to prove
it. I know you did. Anyway, sorry, I'm going to calm it down a little bit because let's be serious for a second. It's been quite a horrific week as the domino effect has rolled out across the Middle East. Different views from all over the place. But what I would say to you is, before everybody gets their knickers in a knot about flights and not flights and all the rest of it, for anybody that's in communication down there, because obviously we're on the internet, which is probably the only way people down there are going to listen to us, do let them know that if they can get access to Al Jazeera, on Al Jazeera's picture is a set of details about proxy servers that people in Libya can use right now to actually get access to Twitter. Google have given some access codes as well on there. But what I would also have to say to you is be careful, because apparently, and this is a claim from Al Jazeera, that currently somebody's trying to jam their signal to the satellite. And actually is technically, I can assure you, it can be done. 100% that is correct. Whether it's true or not, I'm not sure, but that's what Al Jazeera are claiming. But
they say that they've been suffering interference on their ArabSat satellite frequency.
Correctamundo.
You can be watched on Hotbird
and NileSat,
and a number of others.
Yeah, NileSat's quite good because that's relatively close to the region. And Hotbird, I know you'll get Hotbird out there because further away in the UAE, I've got Hotbird before now. So there's a number of ways on there. If you are in communication with anybody out there by telephone, do share with them that if they can access Al Jazeera, or if you can access Al Jazeera, make a note of the proxy servers that are being detailed on the screen 24/7, give them to your friends out there. It will give them a fair chance of getting access to the internet, because that will muck up the Libyan idiot that's still out there.
Well, I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary. And what embarrasses me so much is how other nationalities seem to have managed to get in much, much quicker and start picking up a lot more of their nationals. Mm-hmm. And the very, very slow reaction of the British government. And I was just so amazed to see that that Cameron's announcement, I think this morning or yesterday, is simply, I'm incredibly sorry that we didn't do it earlier.
Yeah, but that's something he's learned from Tony Blair, isn't it? This is a new thing that British prime ministers do. They get something wrong, and all they do is apologise.
I'm incredibly sorry from Eaton, actually.
Well,
he was out selling arms, wasn't he? He was doing a good job, like going out selling arms.
Yes. Well, there's a slight problem here, because Mark's not in the UK, and I'm not in the UK, clearly. So the only tax-paying person in the UK we've got is Lee Banks.
Well, I'm a taxpayer in
the UK, actually, if you want to know.
Are you a taxpayer in the UK?
I'm a UK taxpayer, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, there's two of you then. So,
but I'm here stranded in France, and I'm waiting for Cameron to come and get me out of here too. But I understand that he's incredibly sorry that he hasn't managed it so far.
Well, hang on. We'll bounce into Lee first. Well, you're a taxpayer.
Yeah.
To actually send a naval frigate over there is going to cost you a lot of money. Mm. To send a Hercules there, and I don't know why people just kept on calling it a carrier craft or something on the television. It was a Hercules, one of the best planes around. And also to charter aircraft to go from civilian airports in the UK over to Libya and back.
Yeah.
I can't even start to comprehend what the cost of that would be.
Well, it's going to cost millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of pounds.
Right, but well...
Give millions and millions and millions of pounds to bankers, what's the problem?
Are they going to have to pay the money back?
The people who were brought back?
Yes.
In these circumstances, generally, they are asked to do that. Yeah, they are asked to actually cover the fares. But it depends how much money they've lost, what the situation was, have they flown out there? Is it just part of a rescue mission? Were they on holiday? It depends on so many things. But the simple fact is that if anybody in Britain is churlish enough to object to the fact that, ultimately, like Mark says, finally we went out and rescued our people from this horrendous situation, then they really need to go and live with Gaddafi.
I agree with you about, say the tourist industry, 100% with you, 100%. Yeah. But if somebody, let's just put a timeline into this. Say they've been working in one of the big cities there, whatever one you want to pick up. I don't know, whatever. If they've been working out there on oil fields or something like that for over 5 years, effectively they've chosen to live out there. So they're and they're not paying tax in the UK.
Mm. I accept what you're saying. Yeah.
So should they be paying? I don't think innocent bystanders should be paying.
I think it's one of the what should happen is we go and rescue our people. You can't. It's one of the few things that the Western world does well. Actually, it goes and rescues its own people when they're in trouble.
The United States managed to do that very well in Iran quite a long time ago. But a few problems with the helicopters falling out of the sky.
Well, yeah.
But I agree with you, Lee, completely. Yeah. And incidentally, you know, I think we have to stand together as a community. You know, I think that that's very important. And I think a sense of community gives people confidence. And of course, you know, the other thing is that, you know, it's one thing to say, well, you know, I can't remember what words you used, Eric, but, you know, that they weren't, you know, sort of part of it. Or no, I think the people left here weren't sort of part of it. Mm. But actually, I mean, we are, because we've supported a government that, you know, has decided to support Libya in one way or another and take the benefits out of it and so forth.
Sure.
And so, you know, I don't suddenly think that we can suddenly turn on our heels and say, right, well, thanks very much indeed. We enjoyed those benefits. And now, you know, push off the rest of you, sort yourselves out.
Mm. You see, to answer Eric's question, I think very simply, it's a matter of doing things in the right order and really, go and get your people out of any awkward situation, and depending on the circumstances, and I think this is how it works in all honesty, depending on the circumstances, people who've been out there for 5 years get rescued or they didn't have any intention to come home, if the things hadn't changed, then they should pay. Yeah, they should be paid.
Right,
unless maybe they've lost everything out there. They might have lost everything out there.
Or they pay an affordable contribution. But, I mean, you know, you talk about...
Exactly, that's right.
Look at the amount of corporation tax paid by Barclays Bank, which was just revealed the other day. I think something like they managed to whittle it down to 100-something-or-other million, about 2.5%, when the rate of corporation tax is, you know, well over 20%. I can't remember what the entire rate is. Now, so we could say, basically, they're nil taxpayers in this country, for all intents and purposes, because they managed to escape it. But we're happy to... Well, we didn't actually give money to Barclays, but we're happy to give money to the banking industry.
Which we will come on to later. Don't worry about it, boys and girls.
One little point I'd like to make about this, though. There was I can't remember where I saw it now, but anyway, it was there. Gaddafi, we all know that Gaddafi is round the bend.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that he's the mildest way you could put it, rather eccentric. We also know that he's dangerous, and yet if you go on the internet, and it was on one of the news programs last night, and see how many of our prime ministers have been photographed shaking hands with him, smiling at him, Tony Blair, the one I can't remember his name, the Scottish one-eyed under.
Gordon Brown.
Yeah, him. And they're all shaking hands. We were his friend. We are such a taciturn, almost. It's our attitude to these people like Gaddafi. I know we need the oil and things like that, but our attitude is two-faced. We are a two-faced nation when it comes down to things.
Hang
like
on,
this.
But there's an easy retort to that. Very, very easy. Equally, Westminster prime ministers also went and spoke to members of the IRA when there was a fight going on.
And it resulted
in a resolution which was the best thing for Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland, as it goes.
Yeah, but this is a slightly different thing. We knew about all the problems that were going on in Libya, all the unfairness.
I know, but if you talk to Nutters,
we still treated him as a friend.
I think there's a great phrase from a good friend of mine. And it's quite simple, and it's very apt in this position. Keep your friends close to you, but keep your enemies even closer.
Even closer.
Absolutely. And I think that really sums it up. There's more sad news going on in New Zealand, where there's a massive earthquake, over 6 on the Richter scale, and a whole bunch of aftershocks going on, which has caused even more problems. In fact, I noted that centres where people have been staying have been shut down because the fears of hygiene issues and other things going on, which is a bit of a problem. I'm pleased to say that both in the US and the UK, there's some great teams going out there to work. But it's really weird how this generates wherever you go. It was the same when all the big floods were going on in the USA, when there's other issues. It wouldn't happen in the Arabic world. It wouldn't happen under normal circumstances.
Well, no, because you wouldn't have any hands left to do it.
Exactly. But there are looters. I don't get it.
I think there were reports of it happening in Egypt as well.
Yeah, that was when not prior to the so-called revolution. And it wouldn't.
No, during the revolution.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And it wouldn't have happened prior. And I don't think it would happen today if it was an earthquake situation. I think they've just got different values.
I think it is, and I think this is particularly shameful. That when you take New Zealand, you know, it's almost a part of England, isn't it? The attitude. Yeah. It almost like Australia. You look at it as part of England. And yeah, we have looters in Britain, of course we do. But it came home to me about this looting thing when you realise that everybody in that city has been hurt one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a television producer called Dot Mamani, who is feared missing. She probably is sadly dead now. Yeah. But it was because she was a television producer. It was put out all over the news that Donna Manning was missing.
Yeah. Yeah. Can somebody sit still and stop moving their microphone around?
Yeah, you naughty boy, Mark. they went round and burgled a house.
Oh, no,
they
it's ridiculous.
A house
absolutely
because
ridiculous.
It was on television that she was missing. They found out where she lived and went and looted a house.
Looters unbelievable.
Are there with rapists and paedophiles, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, they are just
stood up against the wall and shot.
In China, they would be, wouldn't they?
Yes. Yeah. Well, they haven't
got an
amoeba. But we've got to move on, boys and girls. So. Yeah. You know, our sympathy goes out to New Zealand especially, and we hope that things do quieten down around other hot spots in the world. And I can only say to the lunatics, which happen to be in power for some 30 or 40 years, you ain't going to go back there again, boys and girls. If you think you can go back to those old tribal ways, sorry, it's finished. Young people will prevail, and young people will actually control what happens in the next 10 and 20 years. It ain't going to be old people pretending to be freedom fighters from the past, because it doesn't work anymore. Quick one here about talking of Egypt. Name my child Facebook.
Oh, I think that's beautiful, yeah. But I'll tell you what, he's done it out of sheer pride and everything. Jamal Ibrahim.
Mm-hmm.
His daughter was born, and he's actually called his firstborn daughter Facebook in a tribute to how he sees that Facebook helped his country's political revolution.
Yeah.
It's lucky he wasn't helped by Consumer Action Group then, isn't it?
That was a really... That was the most wonderful joke from the Tony Blackburn joke book.
What's she going to get called for in a short form, though? You know, people are going to go, hey, Facebook.
No, you just get called Face.
Yeah. Called Face, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that could lead to all sorts of problems.
You're like Mr. T as well as a son. Next. followed by the Colonel.
Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah.
There was one. You remember there was a site, I can't tell you this joke, but it was called My Face.
Stop it. I know where you're going. Although my eldest daughter's actually called Caroline.
Yeah.
And then some people suggested my son, who was number two, should be called Ross after the Ross Revenge, which was the home of Radio Caroline. I can't imagine why that was the case. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, sit down for 2 seconds. While we enjoy listening to one of the most scientific wonders of the last, well, 4 decades, really, I guess, as we listen to the final takeoff of the US shuttle Discovery as she was launched from Kennedy Space Center for the very last time.
TLS is go for auto sequence start.
And we have a go for auto sequence start. Discovery's onboard computers have primary control of all the vehicle's critical functions. 20 seconds. The sound suppression water system has been activated, protecting Discovery and the launch pad from acoustical energy waves. Go for main engine start. We have main engine start. 2, 1. Booster ignition and the final liftoff of Discovery. A tribute to the dedication, hard work, and pride of America's space shuttle team. The shuttle has cleared the tower.
Roger. Space shuttle now rolling over onto its back. They have been in ride into orbit. Discovery now making one last reach for the stars. Through the area of maximum pressure, reducing the stress on the shuttle as it goes supersonic.
Discovery Houston, you are go at throttle up.
Commander Steve Lindsay acknowledging the call from Capcom Charlie Hoba as Discovery's 3 main engines throttle back up. Lindsay is joined on the flight deck by pilot Eric Bowen, mission specialist Al Drew, and Nicole Stott. Mission specialist Mike Barrett and Steve Bowen. Discovery's 3 main engines are burning fuel at a rate that would drain an average swimming pool in about 25 seconds. The engines, combined with the solid rocket boosters, produce more than 7 million pounds of thrust. 1 minute, 50 seconds into the flight, we're standing by for separation of the twin solid rocket boosters. Discovery now traveling 2,695 miles an hour. Its altitude 24 miles. Downrange from the Kennedy Space Center, 29 miles.
RTI.
What do you think of that then, boys?
Oh, I think pretty amazing. Incredible.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'd love to go into space. I would
this
love.
This is the last flight, though, isn't it?
Well, I'd love to. Is the last one for Discovery. Endeavour and Atlantis have still got flights to go. But Discovery was the really old one, and also the one that was used after the disasters. He's doing it again, isn't he?
I know. Tell him off, Eric.
I am.
Tell him off.
Sit still, Mark. Stop fidgeting.
Do you want me to tell him off, Eric?
No. the flight, by the way, is to go to the ISS International Space Station, which I think is just wonderful. Mark?
Sorry, I didn't get that.
No, you're moving your microphone around, you nana.
Well,
actually doing with your... What are you doing there?
I had to go and switch off a sound that was coming through, actually. Sorry.
Do you know what, Mark? That was about as subtle as throwing a brick through a greenhouse window.
Can I ask you a question, Eric?
Yes, sir.
How much does it cost to launch this thing?
Gee whiz.
I mean, each individual launch thing.
I don't know, but as the man said just now, commentating, you can empty the average swimming pool, you know, in X amount of seconds in terms of fuel that's used in the shuttle. I don't know, but...
It runs on water. It's a steam pump.
Stop it off. But the other interesting thing I'd like to bring up is that not only... I just think the whole... mission, the shuttle mission has been so wonderful. I know there's been some really sad fatalities, but that's what happens when you're pioneering, I'm afraid. But
both
the shuttle missions and the more recent Soyuz spacecraft have been unbelievably good. And when you think how old this craft is, it was kind of like running on a Sinclair Spectrum computer compared with what we've got today. Yeah. And it just gets on and works. And
there is a point to make here, though, Eric, honestly. Sorry to interrupt, but I think it needs making.
Yep.
I don't know how... Do you know how much it costs to make this shuttle?
No.
Well, it cost millions, didn't it? It's not cheap. It's not like going and buying a second-hand car for 500 quid. There is a lot of money going into that thing.
No, that's right.
You realise that it's actually only been up in space twice a year since it was invented.
Well, yeah.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Well, that's like marital sex, isn't it? Only up twice a year.
You speak for yourself at your own age. But there is one...
I don't even manage that now, do you?
There is one quickie as we get to the end of part one. Very interesting. The European Space Programme has got a robotic truck, which it sends up to the International Space Station, which has also taken off this week. Unlike the shuttle, what happens with this one is that they send the spacecraft up. It docks with the space station. They clean the air up. They unload all the food from it. They then fill the European Space Agency craft up with all the rubbish from the space station. Yeah. And then a little bit later on, unlike the American one, they don't bring it back down and recycle it.
No, they just chuck it out of the window while they're flying around like we do when we drive.
No, they disconnect the rocket from the space station after it's used all its fuel up, keeping the ISS in the right place. And they put it in an orbit whereby it burns up on the re-entry of the atmosphere over the Pacific Ocean. So they destroy the thing that's cost millions of quid.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Presumably they've done their costings. I mean, I hope it's green because it doesn't sound very good.
It sounds unbelievably bad to me, but...
It sounds to me like what you've been saying, they burn it up over Paris.
Oh, my word. But it's interesting, actually, one of the biggest areas of space exploration is actually based in Toulouse in France.
Yes.
Really big.
Toulouse.
Or to win, whichever way you want to put it. But the truck is...
I had three toilets, yeah.
Oh... Oh, dear. Fabulous. Anyway, that was part one, a postcard from Pop Rad, boys and girls, on a snowy, sunny... And what's it like in Paris, Mark?
Well, it's really pretty mild. Very nice, actually. Very nice feeling.
And it's really lovely here as well, Eric. It's really sunny and nice. It's like a summer's day. I don't have my top on.
I'm going to be
Isn't
really
the world
sick.
A lovely place, really.
I love it. Mark.
Boys and girls, we'll leave them to get on with it. We'll be back in part two in a minute.
I'm incredibly sorry.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.